Welcome into the Saturday show, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning. Jay Catch here, Michelle Bodkin there. I got a fun show ahead, I think, today. It should be a pretty fun one. But Michelle, first off, how are you?
I'm doing well.
That's what we like to hear.
Yeah.
You are. So this weekend's not as crazy as last weekend for you.
One less live event. So, only one less.
So you were 5 for 5 last week. You got 4 this week, and you're halfway through, right
yes.
now?
Yes. Okay. Yep. Today is kind of a break breather day, and then we go Sunday, Monday.
Okay. Well, there you go. So Michelle doing great work. Obviously, you track all of her work at KSLSports.com. I'll encourage everybody to do that. But we got a lot to cover ahead on today's show. We also are going to be joined by one of your old... Do I call them coaching mates? What do I call them? Like from the Salt Lake Stallions, from your old friends, I guess.
It's interesting, yeah, because I have friends that were on the staff. I had friends in the front office.
Sure.
I had friends that were coaches. Obviously, some of the players. I guess in this case, this is an old coaching friend.
Okay.
Well, we'll go with that.
Well, and that's the thing about it is when you get into that world, it's not as big as most people think it is. There's connections everywhere. So once you get in there, you kind of like, okay, there's this little like kind of like spider web of being like, okay, that person knows this person, that person knows this person. Mm-hmm. Like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon in the coaching world, it's more like 2 degrees. It really feels like to anybody.
It's pretty wild how connected everyone is. I think one of my favorite stories I mentioned that I had the opportunity to meet Kevin Still and Mike Norvell.
Sure.
And tip a few back with them. But Kevin Still knows Kyle Whittingham. and he actually told me a story about how I looked it up once and I don't remember exact, but like early 2000, so like 2000, 2001.
Okay.
Kevin Still gets the head coaching job at Baylor. And who did he want as his DC? This guy named Kyle Whittingham in Salt Lake that was doing some interesting things. Obviously, Kyle never took the job.
Sure.
But that was something that Kevin told me that he respects Kyle Whittingham. He really wanted Kyle Whittingham on his staff, but it didn't happen.
How different things might have been had he moved to Waco.
I know, at some right? point.
Interesting. That's the thing about this is there's all kinds of crazy stories out there. There's the whole story, like, not to get off on a tangent, but Bronco Mendenhall, before the players kind of went and said, we want him as our head coach at BYU, he was set to move to UNLV. Like he was going to be the defensive coordinator. He had like verbally agreed to go be Mike Sanford at the time, I think.
Oh, wow.
He was going to be Mike Sanford's defensive coordinator with UNLV.
Yeah. It's so, so crazy. And then the other crazy part of that story is one of the NFL scouts I know hit me up, and somehow it came up that, oh yeah, like I'm having drinks with Kevin Still, and he goes, Kevin Still, that guy was my coach when I was playing in the NFL. So it's so crazy how everybody somehow knows somebody from one point in time in their career in this industry.
That's awesome. All right, so we got plenty to discuss with Lamar Thomas. He'll be joining us. He obviously worked with the Salt Lake Stallions and spent time as a player, as a coach in the pro ranks, so we'll get to that at 11 o'clock. We're also going to talk a little bit about the NFL playoffs. The divisional round kicks off today. We got 4 games that I'm very excited for. I can always watch NFL playoff action. There's no doubt about that. We'll also talk some college basketball. And, well, as of yesterday, MLB to SLC has gotten some real big traction that we need to talk about as well. But before we really dive into the nuts and bolts of today's show, Michelle, do you have a highlight of the week?
I think it was probably last night at the Huntsman Center. The women Utes really, really put on a show.
They did. Was it 20-point victory?
Exactly a 20-point victory over number 6 USC.
Well, and like here's the thing. USC has been so good this year. Mm-hmm. Juju Watkins, obviously kind of the breakout star for them. But Utah kept them in check.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting. No one would neither confirm nor deny, but like it seemed like Utah got under their skin very early and just did not let up. And I think they forced a lot of mistakes, especially early on. There were a couple of times where it was so obvious someone was out of position. There was just a big wide gap, and they were hitting their shots. And it was really, really crazy to see in like the best way possible.
Well, that's always good. You got Jason Jones producing for us behind the glass today. Jason, what's up, dude?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good. You got a highlight of the week for us?
Sure, of course. I always have a highlight of the week because, you know, it's I love all sports, so it's like a year-round thing for me.
I can understand that.
Yeah. The sad thing is, of course, though, is that I'm in the NBA, I'm a Wizards fan, so really no highlights there, and I'm also a Commanders fan.
You're forced to deal with Jordan Poole on a game-by-game basis?
You know.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. And sometimes you got to rebuild. So I guess that's what they're doing. So anyway, I'm also a big hockey fan. I'm a Caps fan, and they're just okay as well. So I take my highlights wherever I can find them.
Sure.
This week, I was very excited that the Commanders actually hired Adam Peters to be their general manager.
You're welcome, by the way.
Yes, no problem.
San Francisco 49ers.
And I figure if you're going to hire somebody to be your general manager, you might as well go to the 49ers franchise because they're obviously wildly successful all the time. So, you know, take that guy or one of those guys and bring him over, and hopefully, you know, things go well from there. So that's my highlight of the week, that the Commanders actually seem like they're maybe heading in the right direction. And, you know, after the cloud of Daniel Snyder lifted, and, you know, maybe things are actually gonna turn around for them.
It'll be interesting. That's the one thing about that franchise is with new ownership, they obviously want change. They fired Ron Rivera as their head coach. Just a whole new regime change.
Sure, right.
And we'll see how that goes because the Commanders, they've got the legacy. Like, I'm old enough to remember like the heyday of what the Redskins used to be, now the Commanders. It's just think how far they've fallen under Daniel Snyder.
Yeah.
Give me a little bit of a climb to get out of it.
Please, Jack Kent Cook, bring him back, man. Bring him back from the dead.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting. Highlight of my week is, so Monday, the NFL Super Wild Card weekend was wrapping up, and I was watching the games. My son comes over, he's just watching the game with me. So I've got two sons now, but my older son.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there, and he looks at me. He's like, Dad, I know what I want to be when I get older. I'm like, okay, what do you want to be? He's like, I want to do that. And he points at the TV. He's like, you want to be a football player? He's like, I want to be on a football player on TV. I'm like, go right on ahead, young man.
Well,
do your thing.
Let's do it.
Live your dream. Dad would be totally okay with that if that's how it works out. We'll see. He's got a long way to go.
I was going to say, you have him doing some flag football stuff, though.
Yeah, he enjoys it. But yeah, we'll see. But it was kind of cool. He's like, I want to do that. I'm like, okay, do it. Like, that's fun. So it's always fun. A lot of my stuff, like when you're a dad, most of your joy feels like either comes to Jason, either, you know, this sports or your kids. One of the two things.
Ain't that the truth?
So one of those things. All right, let's dive in. I want to start off today talking a little bit about the Utah Jazz. They just finished a 6-game homestand. Actually ended up being a 5-game homestand because of the sad situation with the Golden State Warriors. And they finish off the homestand with a loss to the Oklahoma City Thunder. But typically, when you take an L, you're like, okay, what went wrong here, Michelle? Mm-hmm. That's the thing about this. In that game against the Thunder, Oklahoma City's been on this climb. They had stockpiled assets. They had guys like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They got Chet Holmgren in there. Jalen Williams, for anybody who's a West Coast Conference basketball fan, I remember him from Santa Clara playing against BYU. They've got a really nice core of young players. Well, they have made their climb. They're now number 2 in the West right now, and the Jazz went toe-to-toe with them for most of this game. It started off rough. Like, it was turnover central for the Jazz, but they kind of ground their way back into it. They tied the game, I think, 3 or 4 times in the third quarter, then ultimately lose it 134-129. That was Thursday night. But coming out of this homestand, I'm actually more encouraged about the Jazz than I have been at any point this season, simply because of the fact that they've 15 of the last 20 games they've won, if I'm not mistaken. Since Colin Sexton has entered the starting lineup for the Jazz, I believe they are 15-4 in his 19 games he started this season. It feels like this is a team, as they head out on the road now, they got 6 games on the road upcoming here, that depending on how this road trip goes, it could set the tone for, okay, not just play-in team, they could be a play-off team. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we kind of touched on this last week, right? Like, it feels like they found the secret sauce with the group that they currently have.
Sure.
Now, is this going to be the end-all, be-all group? Is this the complete and total vision for this team? I don't think so. I think there's still going to be some pieces moved around and trying to bring in and upgrade some talent.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see that they didn't fold, which they could have. They could have just thrown their hands up and been like, "Yeah." This is just what this season's going to be.
The way this season started, absolutely.
But, you know, I think they worked at it. And like I said, they figured out something that works for this group. And I think, yeah, like you have to feel encouraged. I think this road trip is probably going to tell us a whole heck of a lot, especially coming off of a close loss like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how everybody responds and how they do now that they're not in the comfort of home anymore.
Well, and that's the thing about this is they have been enjoying this homestand. There's no doubt about it. Like they'd played really, really well. They'd won the four before that. Obviously, the Warriors game has been postponed to a later date. We'll find out when that's rescheduled. But then you lose to the Thunder. But then you open up tonight at Houston. Now, Houston's an interesting team in their own right because they've been down since the whole James Harden debacle went down. And they tried to retool it, and they have retooled it to a large degree. And I was reading a thing. Let's see, who's I reading? I met Mark Steinlein. He's doing his own thing on Substack, and he was talking about like the most surprising teams to this point in the season. And he had the Jazz number one. Actually, no, this is from The Athletic. It was the Jazz number one, and then the Houston Rockets number two. And he said, honestly, these two teams are supposed to be lottery teams. They still could end up that way.
Mm-hmm.
But the point made for both of them is both of them are playing better than anticipated. They've got young players. In the case of the Jazz, you look at Lowry Markin and you look at Colin Sexton. In the case of what the Rockets have going for them, you got Alperen Sengun and some of the other guys on that roster that are, okay, so now you open this road trip in Houston against the Rockets. That's a good start to this road trip because it's going to tell us, okay, as you mentioned, coming off a loss, how do you respond now?
Because
mm-hmm. you've had the home crowd behind you now. Now you go to Houston. Let's see how you guys adapt to road life. The good news for the Jazz is right now with what's going on in the road trips of recent, they've gone 500 or they've actually held their own on the road recently. And that's good enough in the NBA. We all know that they're scheduled bosses. That's what happens. Like you look at some games, you're like, yeah, they're probably not going to win that one. But you look at the road trip. So they go to Houston, to New Orleans. Okay, those are two pretty good tests to start this road trip off. But then, no offense, Jason, they go to the Washington
Yeah,
Wizards.
That's a guaranteed win for the Jazz.
They go to Washington, they go to Charlotte, then they finish up in New York with Brooklyn and New York on back-to-back nights. Like, the start of the road trip looks more daunting, and then the back four, you're like, okay, the middle three there, Washington, Charlotte, Brooklyn, you should take those three. And then you finish it off against New York, who the Knicks on any given night are world beaters or look completely inept. It's weird with Tom Thibodeau running the ship there. I think 3-3 is very possible here, and it might start off with two losses, win three, and then lose the finale.
And you know what? I think you got to be happy about that. We talked about how getting road wins in college is hard. It's every bit as hard in the NBA, too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and especially the way the NBA does it, because it's not just like a road game and then you come back home.
Yeah.
It's like several in a row. And so you're traveling from one city to another city. Even like college isn't quite like that.
Well, they left yesterday. So they opened tonight in Houston. So Saturday, January 20th, they start the road trip. Michelle, they are on the road until Tuesday, January 30th. You got a full 10, 11 days on the road. Then they come back home. You have the one day in between on January 31st, and then you're right back in a three-game homestand against Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Oklahoma City. Like there's a good run coming up here for the Jazz,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to, in many ways, it's going to tell us, okay, how good is this team really? Because you go on that road trip, obviously you're battling against all the different things, the road weariness and everything, and by the time they do get to New York in a six-game, on 11 days on the road, you're like, okay, can we get home yet? Like that you got to battle through that, and then you have a really stiff three-game test because I'm telling you, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Oklahoma City, that's a three-game set of home games that are like, okay, well, there's some of the best teams in the league. You're coming home, you're tired. Can you muster enough strength to get through the next 2 to 3 weeks? Because if you do, let's say they go, I don't know, 6-3 in that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a team that is a bona fide, looks like play-in / playoff team. Now, if you go like 3-6... storyline may be okay. You're going to finish in the bottom half of the lottery.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be something to watch for sure. You know, and I think something to keep in mind, while we have seen a lot of improvement from this team, they're not the best team in the league.
No.
Not by a long stretch.
I think Oklahoma City showed that because Oklahoma City and Minnesota are jockeying 1-2 at the top of the West right now. And they are both teams that are ahead on their timelines versus what the Jazz have been,
mm-hmm.
which, okay, it happens. But I think the one thing that you can take some confidence in if you're a Jazz fan out there is, okay, this season started off awful.
Yeah.
It looked like, okay, hey,
we're
race, to the,
it
race to the bottom.
Yeah.
And now Detroit and San Antonio and Washington to a degree have kind of led the way in that race to the bottom, but it felt like the Jazz were going to be in that mix. Mm-hmm. The nice part, as you kind of pointed out earlier on, is Will Hardy and the brain trust of the Jazz retooled everything. They retooled the offense. They've been mixing and matching lineups. They moved Walker Kessler to the bench because it actually worked better to have him on the bench, even though he looks like a foundational piece for you guys, for the team moving forward. So I'm actually appreciative that, as you mentioned, they didn't just kind of throw in the towel and say, all right, well, whatever, this is the year we're going to have. They've been willing to kind of redo some things, retool things, and it's benefited them, and now they're one of the hottest teams in the NBA.
Well, and I think, and I could be wrong, like, I have no idea. I don't sit in those meetings.
Very few people do.
They don't consult with me on this, but I think they're still in a place where they really kind of have to see what they have in order to know what they still want to go get. And you can't really do that if you mail it in. Uh-huh. And you also really kind of can't do that if you're like taking off and you know, doing, like, you kind of have to see both sides of it. And so I think that's really kind of what's happening here.
Well, and that is a very good point, because Danny Ainge has that nickname, Trader Danny. And by the way, if you think he's not listening to trade overtures right now, like, you're up in the night. This is a guy who takes every phone call. Now, does he laugh a lot of those guys off the phone? Like, yeah, that's cute, thanks for calling, click. Like, there's probably a lot of that.
Probably.
But he's not going to be afraid. If he sees a move out there on the quote-unquote chessboard, he's like, yeah, that's what we need, he'll pull the trigger on it. The other thing about this, and Steve Cleveland mentioned this earlier this week with DJ and PK, and I'm sure that many other guests have pointed this out, they've assembled a really, really nice war chest of assets. We're talking draft picks, and they along with the Oklahoma City Thunder, feel like they own the NBA draft in the back half of this next decade. Like, they 2 and 3 picks annually from 2025 on, and that's going to be attractive to different teams out there, because there may be teams that say, okay, you know what, we're blowing it up. Like, what the Jazz did 18 months ago and completely say, you know what, we hit our ceiling here as a team. We're going to completely Michelle just lost her shoe in the studio. That's awesome.
No.
Oh.
There were like pebbles in it.
There
all
you
of
go.
A sudden, they like kicked
That's the
up.
Worst.
Anyways, continue.
Yeah, but that was kind of funny. But the thing is, the Jazz blew it up 18 months ago and have rebuilt it on the fly here. There are going to be teams that are going to want to blow it up in the relatively near future.
Yeah.
And that's when Danny Ainge, with everything that he's assembled, can swoop in and say, okay, yeah, I want that guy from you guys. What will it take? And it's like, all right, here's a couple of picks and on we go. That's the fun part. The Jazz are competitive right now, but they're not top echelon of the NBA. That's very clear. They're not Boston. They're not Denver. They're not Oklahoma City. But you can see the trajectory they're taking right now. Mm-hmm. Their pieces, they're still going to be added, and guys moved off this roster and guys brought in. But it feels like, as long as they remain competitive like this while they continue to build, that's maybe the best scenario to be in if you're the Utah Jazz, where you're not completely bottoming out like the Detroit Pistons, because you feel for the Pistons fans.
Yeah.
They have that Wingstop deal, and I think they've cashed in on it twice this season.
Ugh.
I think home games, if they win, you get like free wings from Wingstop. They have
that
two home wins
awful.
On the season. They're 4-30, whatever they are now.
Ugh.
So at least it's not that bad.
Yeah. And I think this is personally why I can't do the whole NBA thing, like, is because there is the tanking thing.
Oh, there is.
But I think that's a hard thing that teams and management and GMs need to balance.
Oh,
it,
yeah.
And not very many of them are good at it. And I think the Jazz are at least trying to hit that balance of, we need to be bad enough that we can continue to kind of fix things and bring the people and the pieces in that we really need in order to be as good as we want to be. But we can't be so bad that we totally turn off our fan base and they hate us and they don't want to show up and they don't want to spend money and they won't support the product.
Well, and I'm going to echo something that I heard on a radio show earlier this week. It was a national show, and they were talking about Bill Belichick when he left New England now. And obviously, he's looking for a new gig. Apparently, he had a second interview with the Atlanta Falcons. But he's been judge, jury, and executioner in the NFL. He's been the guy who has the final say on personnel for the Patriots. He's been the head coach. Like, he has had the final say. And the point the person was making, and I wish I could remember who it was, but they were saying that there's a reason why there's a separation of front office executives and coaches.
Mm-hmm.
They have to have two different views. front office, you have to have the long view. You have to have the 30,000 foot. We're looking years down the line at what the roster is going to look like, how much money we're allocating to X positions. Coaches, it's the here and now. Mm-hmm. It's like day to day, if not month by month. Like we're in the here and now. So that's the thing about it is Danny Ainge and Justin Zanuck in the front office for the Utah Jazz, they've got more of the vision, okay, 2025, we've got this, and they're looking beyond that. Whereas Will Hardy and his staff, well, they're, all right, game plan tonight for Houston's this. Like, they're on, so there's that separation that has to exist. And the person was saying that Bill Belichick was capable of doing both of those things simultaneously, which is very few people can do mm-hmm. that. Because too often the coaches are so, all right, I got to do what I got to do now, that they kind of, they would rather, I'm trying to say, they're trying to like forsake the future mm-hmm. for getting the W here.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which Bill Belichick, to his credit, by the way, did 6 Super Bowl titles and 24, great run. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing I think the Jazz are going with here is like, okay, Will Hardy knows, like, I'm focusing on the here and now. I'm going to retool things in the moment. I'm going to keep them competitive. Whereas, to your point, Danny Ainge is out there, all right, okay, got these pieces here, but that piece there, he's looking mm-hmm. at it, okay, down the line. And I think it's a nice blend right now because you're right. You don't want to turn off the fan base. If I'm a Detroit Pistons fan, I'm like, yeah, screw the Pistons. I'm all in on the Lions over here.
Oh, completely.
When's Tiger season start up? Like that's what a Detroit sports fan is dealing with right now. It's probably the same thing in the nation's capital for you as a fan, Jason. You're probably looking, okay, when's national season start right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, well, yeah. Or, I mean, I'm a Caps fan, so
sure,
I got
okay.
that.
But you still got Ovi's still doing his thing.
But I will tell you this. Okay. This is why I'm a fan of all of the sports that I am, because could you imagine being a Commanders fan and only a Commanders fan at the beginning of the football season? No. I'm 4 games in and I'm already like, oh, great. Now I get to wait another year before I can root for anything.
Well, that's the thing. I'd go back to the Detroit thing. They opened the season with a home win and didn't win again until the end of December. Like that, they went 0 for the month of November and nearly the 0 for the month of December.
Oof.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
And like the players, the coaches, the front office, like the owners, the everybody's like, oof. Like you're just kind of meandering your way through it. So we'll see how the Jazz do on this road trip. Cause I really do feel like, okay, if you can go 3-3 here in this, and if heck, you go 4-2, 5-1 would be incredible. But that, I think a lot of what we're going to learn about this team is like how much of a push are they truly going to make will come out of this next 2-3 week stretch, because that's kind of the lead up to the NBA trade deadline, which mm-hmm. Danny Ainge, I think it's February 8th is when that goes down. Then you have the All-Star break. And then after that, it's okay. After that, teams that are going to push start pushing hard. Other teams are like, okay, we're going to pull the ripcord a little bit, what the Jazz did last year.
Yeah.
That's when that happens. So this next 2-4 weeks, very, very important for what the rest of the Jazz season is going to look like.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right. Stay tuned.
We will come back on the other side. We've mentioned the NFL. I want to talk about the divisional round of the playoffs. I think we got 4 very, very good games, some fresh blood, some old school slobber knocker type rivalries. Michelle and I are on opposite sides of a game tonight.
Yeah.
We'll get to all that next. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday Show, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning. Michelle Bodkin, Jay Catch along for the ride. Got some California love going right now. And now, when it comes to California love, that means the San Francisco 49ers, obviously. Come on now. Let's be real.
Clearly.
The Los Angeles Rams are out of the playoffs here. We're going to talk about some NFL playoffs here. But big, big weekend. It's the divisional round. This is, as some people call it, the best weekend of NFL playoff football, because you have 4 games. These are considered to be the best 8 of the playoffs, because wildcard weekend can sometimes weed out. Okay, a little bit of a paper tiger over there. I feel like wildcard weekend underdelivered.
Oh, you thought?
Well, there were 4 blowouts. It was like, okay, and
you know what? The problem is that the only one I actually was able to catch was that Lions Rams one.
Which was
a legit good game.
That was the best game. But no offense to anybody else, that was the best game of the weekend. And so the thing about it is, it sets up now where you've got double headers today and tomorrow, and then you're going to have, I think, some really, really fun matchups, and then the teams that advance, they got legit Super Bowl aspirations. You win next week, you're playing in the Super Bowl. You're playing for all the marbles, and that's the fun part about it. But let's start off talking just kind of in, I guess we'll go in chronological order here. We have the Texans against the Ravens. Now, Okay, I don't know if you saw this on social media this morning. So have you heard about the S2 cognition test? It's supposed to be like the next evolution of the Wonderlick at like these NFL at the NFL Combine.
Okay.
So let me explain for a moment here. C.J. Stroud last year when he was
I remember all that. Yeah.
They claimed he had like one of the lowest scores ever on this S2 cognition test. This morning, literally this morning, or that maybe somewhere it came out overnight, is that the owners of that S2 cognition test have come out. Now we're almost a year removed from it, saying that his score was never supposed to be released because obviously they try and keep him private, but it got out. And they're saying that when his score was one of the ones in their testing patterns that it could have been deemed invalid. Okay, guys, here's the thing. You're trying to cover your tracks so that people aren't ripping you guys because this kid has been awesome.
Yeah.
It's sad because it's such a quarterback-driven league that it feels like he's going to get Offensive Rookie of the Year, whereas Puka Nacua set records over here. And here in Salt Lake, we're going to be like, hey, Puka should be Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Give us Puka.
But he's a quarterback-driven league. He's probably going to win it. It feels like it's like this S2 Corporation is probably getting some heat, and it's like, hey, whoa. Hey, it might have been invalid. It's like, okay, guys, whatever.
Whatever.
Move on. This is a really good quarterback matchup. Stroud versus Lamar Jackson for the Baltimore Ravens. Now, you also have two teams who have really got a defensive identity. I really like what the Ravens have done. I don't know if you read the story that Kyle Van Noy's had this career renaissance with Baltimore.
I've seen that.
Career high in sacks this year. And he's become just this pure pass rush threat. And that's what Kyle's really good at. He gets after the quarterback, so good for him. But then the Texans under D'Amico Ryans, trust me, as a 49ers fan, I wish D'Amico Ryans was still in San Francisco coordinating our defense. He's made that Texans team stingy on D. I'm looking forward to this one.
I love a good defensive battle. I think I've been very on the record far as that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a defense girl. And I have to say, like, the Ravens were one of the teams that growing up I followed and watched a lot with Ed Reed.
Sure.
Oh my gosh, Ray Lewis. I loved those teams.
Haloti Ngata up in the middle.
Yes. Offensive side of the ball, but Dennis Pitta, like those teams, Paul Kruger.
Yeah.
Like those teams were so fun to watch. Loved the Ravens in that era.
Mm-hmm.
I love seeing them kind of getting back to that identity. And there's a lot of locals on that team. So I am all on board the Ravens train. Let's go.
Well, and it's the interesting circumstance because the other game is the Packers 49ers. And so the Niners and the Ravens have had that week off. They were the number one seed. They get the bye. I am curious how both Baltimore and San Francisco handled the week off, not playing, sitting home, watching. We had Kyle Shanahan earlier this week saying that in the second quarter of the Packers game against the Cowboys, he started getting ready for the Packers. And for good reason, because they absolutely kicked Dallas's rear end up and down the
field. Shocking.
I know. Way to go, Dallas. And oh, by the way, Mike McCarthy's coming back for another year. We're going to get it right this time.
Sure.
No, you're not.
As long as Jerry Jones is running that operation, you will never get anything right, and that's just what it is.
It's so funny, Mike McCarthy, I don't know if you guys heard the clip this week, and he's like, I know how to win. Great.
I mean, he does, but again, Jerry Jones is his boss.
And we got Jason Cole, who writes for the 33rdteam.com. He's been a longtime NFL writer. He came on with DJ and PK this week, and he's like, here's the thing. Mike McCarthy is the perfect coach for the Dallas Cowboys. He lets Jerry Jones be the center of attention, which Jerry Jones wants to be.
Yes, sir.
Jerry Jones has press conferences with the media after that game against the Packers. He's in the locker room talking to the media. You know, all these players and coaches are milling around, which those are the people that, you know, you'd think would be talking. But here's Jerry Jones holding court in the middle of the Dallas Cowboys locker room.
He's larger than life, man.
Oh, no doubt.
I mean, he doesn't stay in the hotel with all the rest of the teams for the combine. Yeah. He parks a bus outside of the damn hotel.
Yeah.
Like,
he's still the GM. He's 80 years old.
He's crazy.
Jerry's living the dream that a lot of us would think we could pull off. And they had a really good team. To be honest, Dallas was good. But when it comes to playoff time, the Dallas Cowboys, they just crumble. So anyways, that's beside the point.
Jerry Jones tangent.
Whatever, Jerry. Do your thing, man. But it's going to be interesting how the Niners and the Ravens handle this because the Texans, major upstarts. Like, last year, the Texans were awful.
Yeah.
You get a good quarterback. You get a good coach. You get a good defensive piece in Will Anderson, obviously coming in from Alabama to kind of bolster the pass rush. And suddenly the Texans are relevant and they're a threat. Meanwhile, the Packers, similar circumstance. Mm-hmm. Jordan Love came on super strong in the back half of the season. Obviously, all of us here locally pay attention. I mean, Utah State kid. And it's fun to see that. But these two quote-unquote upstarts, how are they going to handle going up against the number one seeds? Because the Niners and the Ravens separated themselves from the rest of their divisions, or leagues, I should say, their conferences. And there's a whole play versus rest situation here.
Yeah.
But these are the two elite teams of the regular season. How do these two younger teams do it? Because the Packers are the youngest team on average age in the league
wow.
right now. I think it's like 25.3 years old. Jason, do you remember seeing that stat?
In fact, they're the fourth youngest team ever to start a playoff game. Yeah,
that's what it was.
Wow,
okay.
Yeah. That's like, crazy.
They've got a core of guys. And obviously, as that core ages, there are going to be guys that get moved because it's just the NFL. It's a salary cap league. It's what it is. But Texans in a similar circumstance. Really young, upstart. It's kind of the whole idea of, okay, elite regular season team gets the week off, is quote unquote able to get healthy, and then these other teams that are okay, how much momentum are they carrying over into this? I'm looking forward to this. What do you make of the Niners, either one of these games?
That's the funny thing too. I identify as a Packers fan.
Sure.
My fandom has cooled off. Just because,
as it does in this industry.
Yeah, and it's not like, I mean, I get excited when they're really good because that's my childhood team, but I'm much more interested in where all the locals are.
Sure.
And stuff, and like guys that I covered. So it's very different now than what it used to be. Niners are also a team that I grew up really liking.
It was hard to ignore when you grew up here in Utah with the Niners.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's a game that either way, I'm kind of happy and good with that. Those are two teams I kind of grew up cheering for. And both have those local connections.
I'm similar to you. The Niners were my team growing up, but Brett Favre, I just had this man crush on that dude as a player. And now he's
disgrace.
A little bit different story on that. But on the field, the dude was just gunslinger personified.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is, so last night I was watching the Polynesian Bowl, watching a lot of the local high school guys who have enrolled in college or will be going. Guys like Falatau Satuala were playing, and I think Tate Nakua. There were like 10 guys. Isaac Wilson. By the way, Isaac started out super, super hot, and then his entire team like melted down. It was like turnover central.
That's kind of what I gathered, unfortunately. But
he wasn't the only one. Everybody on that team was like, here, have ball.
I don't want to touch it.
But anyways, that game gets over, and they kind of do their postgame thing. And you know what kicks on the NFL Network right afterwards? A replay of the divisional round between the Packers and the 49ers from 2021.
That's
and
crazy.
Me being the football junkie I am, I sat there for an additional 30 minutes when I should have been sleeping with my sleeping son sitting next, and I'm just like, you know what? This is awesome because it's the Packers in their home uniforms, the green and gold, the Niners in their road whites with the gold. It's just like, you know what? This is what I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm looking forward to tonight is that this is the Packers and the Niners have got a really strong history.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is they never met in the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken, until 96.
Oh, wow.
But they've had in the last 30-ish years, give or take, they've had a lot of classic matchups. And these are two teams that have got a lot of tradition and should cap off a really fun Saturday. But then we get what I think might be the least recognized matchup tomorrow. It's in the NFC as well. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Detroit Lions.
What? Yeah.
Detroit is going insane right now. They got their first playoff win. You watched that game last week.
I did watch that game.
The crowd inside Ford Field was going absolutely bananas. And for good reason. They hadn't won a playoff game in 30 years.
Yeah.
Like, they've got a team that is pretty good. But then you got Tampa Bay over here. Similar circumstance to the Packers and the Texans. They won, 7 of 8 coming into the playoffs? Baker Mayfield is leading the way now. This should be fun because one of those two teams is playing for a Super Bowl berth next week.
Yeah. I'm all in on the Lions. I just think it's a cool story. I love the city of Detroit. I've only been there once, but we really explored it when we were there. I would love to go back someday. I had the best time. I just think the vibes are so cool. I know everybody says it's like a dump and it's run down. I loved Detroit.
Okay.
I'm all about Motown, the Motor City.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, love the entire vibe of that. So I'm all in on the Lions for this one.
It's fun to see because I think you and I are kind of a similar situation. It's like, you're a Packers fan, I'm a Niners fan, but I like the NFL. I just think NFL football, I can watch any game it feels like these days and enjoy it. But this, if you're the lay NFL fan, this is awesome because these are two teams. Now, the Buccaneers with Tom Brady, they won that Super Bowl not that long ago, but they when Brady left, it was like, all right.
Okay, back to the norm.
Yeah, like back into the back of the pack for you guys. But the nice part is Baker Mayfield has come in, Todd Bowles. They put together a pretty decent squad. Now, I think they got some flaws to them, but this is still fun to see them doing their thing because they are going up against a fellow upstart in Detroit. And I don't think anybody, no offense to anybody who's a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan. I have an uncle who's a big-time Buccaneers fan.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to call him today and say, sorry, Uncle Bart, but it's all about the Lions. Like, the storyline, the lovable losers, the Lions, they haven't won anything for decades. Come on, I want Niners-Lions for the NFC Championship, and that would be a ton of fun, but we'll see.
Then who are you going to root for?
Oh, Niners, come on.
Oh, well, okay.
It's just it's still my team. But,
oh, okay.
But
I figured I'd had to check.
The Detroit story, it's not over yet.
Yeah.
It's far from over, because Dan Campbell, by the way.
That is such a great story.
What a stud.
That's such a great story within a great story.
I want to coach that team. Why? I want to go win there. Nobody wins there, Dan, but he's proven he can. Cool, good for him.
Yeah.
Now, the final game, we'll get to this real quick, is the best burgeoning rivalry, I think, in the AFC. You got the Kansas City Chiefs going to the Buffalo Bills. Mm-hmm. Now, if Kadarius Toney hadn't lined up offsides, this is the Buffalo Bills at the Kansas City Chiefs. That's how crazy one play could have changed this completely. But for the first time in his career, you're going to have Patrick Mahomes starting a road playoff game. He's played at home the entire way so far in his career.
Be interesting to see how he handles that. I just because I'm so into like the new blood thing, like I was all in on Kansas City when they kind of first rose up, but they've done it a couple of times.
Yeah, two Super Bowls the last 4 years.
You know, let's go Buffalo Bills. I love that Dalton Kincaid is becoming such a thing. Like,
so
incredible.
We had Vic Carucci, works up there in Buffalo, on yesterday with DJ and PK. And we had him on, this is probably towards the start of the season. And I remember PK asked a question, hey, so what's kind of been the vibe around Dalton Kincaid? And Vic couldn't have been, no offense to him, more dismissive of, he's like, he's a rookie tight end. We'll see. I don't know. Like, just, it's like, okay. He's like, there's promise there, but we'll see what he can do. And this is before Dalton really had come on and done his thing. And then we had him on yesterday because we just want to get a feel for how he's like, guys, I think I joined you last time and I was kind of down on Dalton Kincaid. I was wrong. He's like, this kid has been everything they expect him to be. I thought it was too high in the draft to be taking a tight end when they took him. I don't know why they moved up to get him, but he has proven to be a weapon that they needed in this offense. And you're right. It's a fun story because it's a local connection. Mm-hmm. Obviously, him having no one did it at the University of Utah. This should be fun. And by the way, the Chiefs are going to be like, hey, this was like spring after they played in negative like 27 degrees. I think the temperature, let's see, the forecast is, AccuWeather says 20 degrees in Buffalo tomorrow and clear.
Oh.
So yeah, it's going to be like a spring day for
the
Kansas.
Heat wave.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, compared to last week.
Don't break a sweat.
If you don't break a sweat instead of breaking a helmet like Patrick Mahomes.
That was crazy.
The
fact that they didn't catch that too, I was like, I'm not an expert, but I kind of don't think it's safe for him to continue playing with that.
It's like, get him checked out, guys. He just took a helmet shot and it literally broke his helmet, but nonetheless, these four games look like they all have intrigue to them. I'm hoping we don't get blowouts like we did last week. I'm hoping we get actually good games, but the storylines for all eight of these teams are really, really fun. And this is what the NFL wants, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
They want, okay, when you go into the division round, all eight of these teams have big fan bases who are behind them, great storylines, and it just sets up for, okay, by the way, the Leviathan that is the NFL and TV ratings, it continues because they have all the storylines coming together.
Well, and I think the parody's nice. I think it's nice to see a little bit of a mix up. Like, there's a couple of like the usual suspects that have been in it the last little bit, but it's also nice to see some of the kind of middling teams that sometimes are in it, but sometimes aren't in it, kind of in this one. And it's also cool to see some of these teams that we've basically never seen in this position in the mix. So I'm hoping that we get a nice little shakeup here and some good games.
Yeah, we'll see. The other thing about this, if you're the Texans, the NFL loves that story because they went from like worst to first overnight.
Gosh, yeah.
That's what the NFL loves, is that you have that. Like, see, we proved it. In a year, you can go from bottom of the barrel and you're in the playoffs and you're playing. It exists, and that's what the NFL wants. They want parity. They want all 32 teams as on an even playing field as possible. Now, that's never going to exist in reality, but they're going to do their absolute darndest to make it happen.
I mean, the nice thing is it's so much more cyclical than college football is.
Oh, like, absolutely.
It takes a lot for a newcomer to kind of break in, and usually it's like a one-time deal, and then they're back to where they came from.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Yeah, you do. You really do. You see some college football teams that will kind of rise up, and they go right back. There's that top tier, though, that kind of just stays.
Always there. Yeah. Always there. So, and I think that's what makes a story like the University of Utah so interesting, is that
they're knocking on the door.
Everybody keeps waiting for them to be the fluke, and yet they kind of keep inching their way.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating because that doesn't happen in college football very often.
The next step for Utah, kick down the bloody door. That's the next step. Is you're right there on the cusp. Just knock it down and get through. That's next year could be that year. We'll see. It'll be kind of fun. We got plenty of offseason to discuss all that, no doubt. All right, we will come back on the other side. We'll get to technical fouls. Coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, Lamar Thomas worked with the Salt Lake Stallions, worked in college football, a former NFL player in his own right. We'll talk all things football with him. That's coming up next right here on The Saturday Show.
If you're coming from the street with dirty shoes on your feet, that's a technical foul. If you switch the radio to some modern music show, that's a technical foul. If you touch the thermostat,
you'll get hit with a bat.
Cause that's a technical foul.
You will feel my wrath.
That's a technical foul.
Personal file, 69, office. He was giving them the business.
A technical foul.
Welcome back to the Saturday Show, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning. As you heard, it's time now for technical fouls. We talk about some of the more offbeat and just downright stupid things in sports, and just it never disappoints. So I'm gonna have you start off this week, Michelle. What do you got for us?
You know, it's so enjoyable seeing Alabama fans getting a taste of reality. Like, I mean, just unreal.
They lose Nick Saban and...
You know, you lose Nick Saban and all your guys are heading out the door. And all of a sudden, there's this realization that there's a problem with the transfer portal and how things work and how much it sucks and all the tampering. And I was like, that's really kind of rich coming from a team that tried to lure away a player from the University of Utah, very, very public knowledge at this point. Actually, we just barely talked about him.
Dalton Kincaid offered $1 million to go play for Alabama.
Mm-hmm. And now the shoe's on the other foot and they don't like it. Kind of funny. I saw a tweet yesterday that said they hired Kalen DeBoer and now the players are out the door.
Oh, hey. There we go. Nice rim shot. There we go. I like that. But that... That's the thing about it is Alabama, yes, they are kind of getting the, oh, hey, what reality exists in college football? There were people that out this week saying that Nick Saban saw this trajectory and is like, you know what? I'm out. I don't want to deal with this. But regardless, you're right. It is kind of like sweet justice in a way to see Alabama fans like, hold on, why is that guy, like Caleb Downs, for example, he leads Alabama in tackles. He's the first freshman since at least 1970 to do that. Looks like future superstar. And as soon as he could, he's out the door. Julian Sayin, I believe is how you say his name. There's five-star freshman quarterback. He's like, I'm not playing for Caleb, but I committed it out to Nick Saban. I'm out. Welcome to reality at Bama. This is how the rest of the college football universe feels.
Yeah. Yeah. So funny.
Unless you're an Ohio State fan. All right. Jason, what do you got?
Okay. So as you know, I am a huge baseball fan.
Yes.
Probably bigger than anyone in Utah. So
he can give you a run for your money.
He might. And Steve Klauke might as well. Although Steve Klauke and I have had many a good baseball conversations. So, but I have to, my technical foul has to go to Wander Franco.
Yeah.
If you're not familiar with the Wander Franco story, you're probably going to want to look it up. I'm not going to delve into it too much, but I don't care what culture you're in. Mm-hmm. If you're 21 and you're having relations with a 14-year-old, that is not okay.
Let's not do that.
And when you're paying money to her and to her mother, and her mother is demanding more, the whole situation is horrible. Eesh. It's icky. It's horrible. And I don't care, again, what culture you're from. That is not okay. You cannot do that.
Yeah.
And you should know better. Yeah, yeah. You should know better. I mean, someone would make an argument that you're still a child at 21. We've seen lots of 21-year-olds make some really stupid decisions, but that doesn't matter. You got to have a better head on your shoulders than that if you're Wando Franco.
This guy, you
can't.
This guy has hundreds of millions of dollars potentially in his future that hang on this one awful decision. What just happened?
We just lost the entire computer system. So there we go. So that's real fun. But anyway, so and so my technical foul is Wander Franco. Ugh. I mean, it just flat out there's nothing okay with what he did. Yeah. Period.
No, you're right. There's absolutely no doubt about that. All right, mine. Real quick, we're gonna go back to the college football realm. Now, Texas thinks that they are like God's gift to collegiate sports. And so Rodney Terry, their head coach, they lost to UCF Wednesday night in Big 12 basketball action. UCF players, as Oklahoma players and some Kansas players years past, did the horns down gesture in celebration after the game. Rodney Terry, I don't know if you guys saw this, in the post-game handshake line is – you can see him mouth, don't do that bleep. That's classless. Blah, blah, blah. And 30 minutes later, he's doing post-game, and he says this. When you do those kind of things, it looks very classless and also looks like you were just hoping to win. We never go into games trying to hope to win. We go into games expecting to win. So we don't act like that. We expect to win. We don't jump up and down and act like we won the national championship. We sure don't step on anybody's home court and act crazy and try to show them up in any way. We don't do that.
It's just a hand signal. Get over it, man.
Oh, my gosh. Texas's ability to be irrationally upset about a hand gesture knows no bounds.
So you're acting like they, like, dug up your floorboards and, like, hauled them out of the built. Like, just, I don't know. That's a weird thing to get all upset about.
He finished off with this. You guys won. Hey, we shake your hand and tip our hat to you, but we're not going to let you act that way in our building. You're not going to put your horns down and do all that nonsense.
Sit down and shut
up. Oh, my gosh, bro. Cool it. Like, and here's the thing. I did a podcast with some Texas Tech guys this week, because BYU takes on Texas Tech today. And they said, hey, Jake, can you promise us one thing for BYU fans? I'm like, what? They're like, when BYU plays Texas, if they beat them, will they do the horns down for us too? And I'm like, I can't guarantee it, but it would not surprise me in the least. It's just,
and that's just kind of when you react that way, like, people are going to.
It's going to happen more.
It's going to happen more. Like, because it's petulant and childish.
Yeah. Huh?
Like,
yeah.
Whatever.
So, way to go, Texas. Grow up and fun times. All right, that's technical fouls. We will come back on the other side. We're going to be joined by Lamar Thomas, the former Miami everything, by the way. Like Miami Hurricane, Miami Dolphin. Went to high school in that area, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. We're going to have him join us next. Michelle knows him from their time with the Salt Lake Stallions together. Get some memories of that. We'll maybe talk some NFL playoffs with him, get his perspective on how things are going in the pro ranks. We'll get to all that next. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.